and welcome to the ASP podcast. The American Security Project is a non-partisan think tank looking into the sum of the big national security issues facing us all. This week, we have seen the President of the United States in Kabul. While there, he signed a strategic partnership agreement with President Karzai and spoke to the American people on his plans to conclude the Afghan conflict. Today, we're joined by Stephen Cheney, ASP's CEO and former Marine Corps General, Matthew Wallen, ASP's Public Diplomacy Specialist, and Joshua Pardlow. Joshua is a former Kabul Bureau Chief for the Washington Post. He has written from all over the world and is presently writing a book on the politics of Afghanistan. He joins us in a personal capacity today. Josh, how long were you in Kabul?
I've been in Kabul for about 3 years. I got there in 2009, right before the presidential elections that year in the summer.
How did you find the elections?
The elections were very dramatic. It was the president was challenged quite aggressively by Abdullah, the Northern Alliance candidate, and you know there's a lot of fraud and back and forth and contentiousness with the United States over the extent of the fraud and the president's supporters' role in that, and so it ended up being one of the rifts that with the United States relationship that has carried on for the past few years.
I mean, that doesn't seem to have sort of concluded itself.
No, right, and we're still in the middle of that, yeah. And dealing with the fallout of that relationship, and why this week it's one of the first real positive signs, I think, in that relationship in a long time.
And when did you leave Kabul?
I left in January.
You're missing all the excitement.
Yeah. I went back for February. I was there during the Quran burning protests, right, which was pretty dramatic as well.
It's not fun to be in Kabul during a protest.
Yeah, that's for sure.
In any sense. And what did you find being in Kabul? I mean, how did you find it?
Well, I think Kabul itself has always been, it seems like a little bit apart from the war. I mean, there's sporadic violence. There was violence again yesterday, a suicide bombing. But it's not compared to, I lived in Iraq for a couple of years before that, and the war was very much in the capital, and there was a lot of violence, and in Afghanistan, the war is mostly in the countryside, and so living in the capital, you don't really feel the day-to-day violence, but I think the insurgency has been just grinding on for the entire time I was there, and it didn't get significantly worse in the capital, but didn't also get that much better. So it's been kind of a status quo for the 3 years I was there.
And that can be sort of grinding on the Afghan people. Yeah. It's sort of depressing that this just grinds on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of frustration, growing frustration with just the sheer length of time of this conflict. And you saw that when I was there last in February with these protests I mentioned on the over the Quran burnings and then the soldier in Kandahar who killed the civilians. So, you know, a lot of people are just looking for this to somehow
how do you end this?
How do you end this? Yeah.
I mean, you definitely see this from the American people's point of view,
right.
And in Afghanistan, they're fighting that. Mm-hmm. So it's even more so.
Right.
Well, on that, I mean, what's been the sense of the average Afghan? I mean, are they just under the impression that this is just another power that's passing through Afghanistan and they're waiting to get it all over with and rinse and repeat, or do they feel that actually might turn out differently this time?
You know, I think there's definitely a range of opinion in the... I think that more and more, though, a lot of the Afghans are thinking the American troops are going to be leaving, and therefore, what you hear from the soldiers over and over is that the Afghan, they're not choosing sides, you know, so they're afraid to support us because they know that we might leave and then the Taliban will rush in. So there's that fence sitting. Is a common dynamic there.
Has it been that way for the past 10 years?
It's been that way, the entire time I've been there, and I think that's one of the real obstacles of getting Afghans to support the U.S. military project there. You know, apart from whether they think foreign troops, should or shouldn't be in their territory, I think just the fear of supporting that outside power, because there's been so many reprisal killings of people who have worked for the U.S. or supported the U.S. All the, you know, government officials just picked off one after the other. So it's really, you know, it's a dangerous prospect to side with the United States in Afghanistan.
Despite the surge, did the surge make any significant difference? Did you?
I think the surge definitely made. You know, in the places where they had the bulk of the troops, you saw a big difference. You know, in Helmand Province,
sure.
in parts of Kandahar, you know, where you can throw tens of thousands, 20,000 U.S. troops, I mean, you're going to make a safer, more secure area. It's just that's a big country, and there's a lot of different places where you don't have the troops all in those quantities, all up along the border with Pakistan.
So it's kind of like whack-a-mole.
Yeah,
if you think it's there, it's going to pop up over there.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah, and I think that you didn't have the groundswell of changes the way you saw in Iraq when the Sunni insurgents kind of switched sides en masse, and you haven't seen that sort of widespread change of support in Afghanistan. So even though certain villages, certain areas might be more secure, other ones have deteriorated, the insurgency is really fluid, it moves around to a bunch of different places, so it's hard to stabilize.
Yeah,
the
and
country.
Tribal politics is very different in Iraq
right.
and Afghanistan.
Right.
I like to say, sort of Iraqi tribal politics is a presidential system
mm-hmm.
where they sort of elect the sheikh and then he decides what goes on.
Right.
In Afghanistan, it's a parliamentary system.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, everyone's, you don't have the same, I mean, there are powerful people who command the allegiance of big groups, but it's not the same way where, you know, six or seven sheikhs can decide what all the Sunnis in a province will
yeah.
do in Afghanistan. It doesn't
yeah.
work that way.
You heard the president's speech last night, or heard parts of it, I'm
yeah.
sure, and he mentioned the Taliban a couple times. That, what's your take on dealing directly with the Taliban as an entity and welcoming them to the fold, so to speak, or
mm-hmm.
saying let's deal? What,
right.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I think it's going to be a hard thing to handle, and it's going to be tricky politics going forward. I think they, you know, most people think or a lot of people in Afghanistan think the U.S. kind of came too late to the negotiations game, and there was a period during the surge when the policy was basically, let's pound them into submission, let's
sure.
not talk to them until they're so degraded that they were in a better negotiating position, and that didn't really pan out, I don't think, the way they expected, because
yeah.
the Taliban haven't been beaten to that point yet, yeah. to the point of because of the sanctuary in Pakistan,
yeah.
what have you. So now I think the Taliban are in a pretty good negotiating position and don't really need to negotiate the way the United States does. I mean, I feel like they the troops coming down, troop numbers coming down, they can again keep waiting this out as long as they have that, their leadership is protected the way it is, and so they. I don't see what they have to gain as much from negotiations now. I mean, it's clear what we have, the United States has to gain, but, you know, so you see it in, I mean, it's hard to know exactly what's happening in the shadows because those talks are all very secret, but it seems like, the last I've heard, it seems like they're not at the table right now. There was a pause after a few months ago. There was another rounds of talks, but it doesn't seem like much is going on now. So you can see how they can just, I think, wait this out a little
sure.
bit. So
you talked about the provinces like Helmand
yeah.
and the security situation there, but how much of this problem really centers about Kabul and the politics in Kabul?
Yeah.
I mean, is it not so much the provinces? I mean, we went out there and attempted
right.
to impose security
yeah.
and made some modest progress,
mm-hmm.
but it's not. That's not the problem.
Right.
The problem
yeah.
is the political system. The problem rests in Kabul. Is that,
yeah.
Do you agree with that statement?
I would agree with that. And yeah, I would agree with that in the sense that I think, you know, the insurgency is fighting not only the foreign troops, but what they see as this puppet government. And so, that drives, I think, a lot of the
sure.
the violence. So to the extent that government doesn't either represent all of the Afghans or provide enough services. You hear that often. That, you know, they're not satisfying the people or are seen as corrupt and predatory, and that I think fuels some of the animosity towards the government.
But is there a such thing as representing all the Afghans?
I mean, I think you have a pretty large, you know, political movement, the Taliban right now, which is not. I mean, there are representation. There are people that represent some of the insurgent groups sort of peripherally in the government, and factions, particularly the Hezbi Islami, that are more political than as much as military at this point. But there is a big chunk of that's not really represented in the government, and I think that's what the negotiations, if they succeed, will somehow incorporate those people into the government in a way that's not. Doesn't lead to the collapse of the government.
Yeah. And I also think we've got to face reality that outside Kabul, it's a very rural country. And the one thing we know about rural environments throughout the whole world is that they don't like government.
Right.
In fact, they don't want government. And sort of American international community has gone round to these rural communities, mm-hmm. imposing government on them.
Right.
And it's not a nice government either.
That's true.
I mean, do you see that when you were there, that the international community was understanding that situation?
I think there was a time, definitely during the surge, when there was a lot of attention in 2010 on Afghanistan, where they had pretty ambitious goals in terms of nation building or governance reform. I mean, they tried to create local government in Afghanistan in a way that I think it wasn't ready for.
Yeah.
I mean, they, down to the hundreds of districts across the country, I mean, they had plans for every district government and trying to push people out from Kabul to staff these local provincial offices, and then within that, the district offices and the ministries, and trying to get the budgets to flow from Kabul to, which is not necessarily a bad goal,
yeah.
and something, you know, and in a, and that's how maybe a modern government should function, but it just was a far cry from what had existed in Afghanistan as a really ambitious goal to accomplish in a short amount of time and led by a military effort like that. So I think they've stepped back from those types of grand ambitions now with the troops, scaling back.
So I guess what's done is done, but after last night, the president has a commitment now to 2023, at least a financial commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Troop size is up in the air, I suppose, but what does that portend for the future? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah. Well, I think ideally for the Americans, you're able to have a certain number of bases, probably a handful of bases where you can keep low tens of thousands of troops, special forces to do.
Yeah, I think one of the precursors last night was no permanent.
Right. Well,
no
they say no
bases.
Permanent is
yeah.
the key
well,
word. I mean,
permanent.
They want they want long term bases, but they the Afghans won't accept permanent. So
right.
The Chinese did the same to the British with Hong Kong.
Yeah, yeah.
It was 99
it's
years.
Still going. Yeah.
Temporary. Yeah.
Yeah. I think. The Americans, the Afghans through this whole strategic partnership negotiation were really pushing for concrete funding commitments,
yeah.
They're like, just tell us, sign that you will pay X amount of dollars for X amount of years, and that was something the U.S. would never agree to, and they say they can't agree to it because, these are congressional decisions,
yeah, that's right.
and they're not something that the future administrations that aren't in power now can commit to, so it makes sense, but so now that you see in the language of the partnership that they have agreed to at least ask Congress for a decade for funding for the Afghan security forces and for the other, I guess, civilian development.
But is money the solution?
I don't know if it's the solution. It's you hear a lot when people do a lot of the comparisons to the Soviet experience, and people say, well, the government lasted 3 years after the troops left, and it finally collapsed when the money stopped. So it wasn't until...
Maybe it is.
I mean,
yeah.
The problem is it sustainable anyway to keep a government that's basically just surviving on foreign aid? And so if the government is only surviving because of foreign aid, is that a sustainable solution anyway? So are we going to try to keep this government in power just because it's the one we started and the one we think is best? Or
great question.
You know,
yeah.
So
I mean, that gets the heart of the issue, I think, with Afghanistan is actually what do we actually want for Afghanistan? What does the international community want? We know what we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want them to be a base for Al Qaeda.
Right.
But then, what's the other side of that? And I, you know, I think since 2001, we've lacked a vision.
Yeah.
I say we've lacked a vision. Some people have put out this Valhalla vision of Afghanistan, that would be in Switzerland and Asia, but nothing that's been based in reality.
Switzerland with a lot less money.
Well, a lot less of their own money.
A lot of banks.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting. You know, the president says our goal, one of the lines of the speech last night was our goal is not to create a country in our own image, it's to defeat and dismantle Al Qaeda. And we're on. You know, and you could argue that that was done years ago.
Well,
I mean, you know, Al Qaeda is just not part of this.
40,
yeah.
40 members of Al Qaeda, and we're spending $300 billion on 40 members of Al Qaeda?
Al Qaeda is not in the reality of hardly anyone's war in Afghanistan. It's, I mean, the troops aren't fighting Al Qaeda. You know, the civilians aren't dealing with political issues related to Al Qaeda. It's just, it's so peripheral. So it's, you know, I mean, you could say that's been already accomplished, but there are a whole bunch of other problems that haven't been.
I mean, how did you? I mean, what was the comparisons you saw between Afghanistan and your time in Iraq? What were the big differences?
I mean, well, the obvious one living there is just the level of violence was just extremely high. I mean, the period I lived there, I was there from 2006 to 2008, which is when it was in Baghdad, which is when it was really, the insurgency was really rolling along. And then President Bush sent the additional troops there as well. So there was a lot of fighting in the city. I think, you know, it's interesting to see how some of the same moves are being tried in Afghanistan that were tried there. And a lot of people attribute, I mean, I think a lot of people attribute the surges to reducing the violence in Iraq, and then, you know, that broadly was repeated in Afghanistan, but also the focus on local militias and when General Petraeus came in, that was a big policy of his, was to try to replicate might be not exactly, if you'd agree with that, but you know, try to take the success of a Sons of Iraq student insurgent program and do that in Afghanistan, and that didn't really play out the same way, or it hasn't so far. And then I think Afghanistan has much more muddled history with militias, and so it's
an elite.
But, you know, I mean, in many ways it feels the same. You're out there, especially when you're out there with the troops, you're in these desert environments often, and, you know, you don't know who the enemy is. You know, you show up to a village on an air assault or mission or something, and all the, you know, young men are gone. You know, and it's always kind of chasing ghosts. I mean, that's one similarity of the actual way the wars are fought.
But in Iraq, Al-Qaeda was much more active, and especially in Al-Anbar province, where they turned them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the U.S. used that to their advantage to turn the populace against Al-Qaeda, and they finally figured out, geez, these guys are really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So they can identify who the bad guys are.
And
they flipped it. But that's not happened in Afghanistan, although Al-Qaeda's gone. I guess you would say it's the Taliban now, but our objective has not been to root out the Taliban, or has it?
I think it has not been our objective in maybe the White House, or publicly, but I mean that it has been practically the objective is to defeat the Taliban. I mean that's what they do on a day-to-day basis there.
So now we're negotiating.
Yeah.
I think the Taliban are very different than Al Qaeda was in Iraq, because not just the level of violence, but the fact that the Taliban are Pashtun, they are from the area themselves, and you know
big difference.
Yeah.
Big difference.
You know, they are brothers,
yeah,
rather than cousins.
Right, right. Yeah, and there was a switching, the Iraqis switching to the U.S. side in order to drive out the outsider, extreme al-Qaeda in Iraq. And here, if the Taliban's not going to switch sides to fight their own people necessarily. There's not the same outsider presence that you can rally people against.
We talked here in the past about the fact that the lessons we learn from doing these conflicts are all based on human beings and all based on human experiences. And we're going forward from the defense review and from the national security strategy of reducing our troops, of reducing the size of other forces. And moving towards a more mechanistic view. Steve, what do you think about
that? You know, Paul, part of my earlier question dealing with the provinces versus Kabul, and Josh, you said it's a big country. I mean, you want to settle every corner, every part of that country. You're talking not just hundreds of thousands, probably a million troops. Obviously, we're not going to make that commitment, and that's not what we want to do. So last night, the president turns around and quotes figures about the hundreds of thousands of now self-defense forces that they've built up, and how that we're going to shift that burden to the Afghanistan people, which is probably the right way to go. I mean, what's the alternative here? Are we going to keep committing, throwing troops at it when that's not the answer? The answer is Kabul, in my opinion. And I'm not sure we can fix that. I mean, that's an internal political problem there, which we probably exacerbated when we went in and took it out and then left, and haven't been able to fix that aspect of it. And I don't think that's a forces question. It's not a U.S. military thing to solve. It's a diplomatic issue. You know, how do you feel about that, Josh?
Yeah, I agree. And also, I think your leverage on fixing it has decreased dramatically from earlier in the war. So now, President Karzai again and again talks about these sovereignty issues, and he doesn't want the Americans to be meddling in his internal political decisions and who's going to be governor of X province or who's going to be a minister. And these are, and then he extends it to also, he wants control of the detentions and he wants control of the special operations raids and that sort of thing. And so the government is a big part of the problem in Afghanistan, I don't know if we really have the tools to fix it at this point.
I don't know either, I'm not sure what the solution is. I mean, I don't think anybody knows what the solution is, except that we're not going to continue pouring hundreds of thousands of troops into the country. The U.S. is just tired of it, And if Al-Qaeda's gone,
I think that speaks to the need from when we start doing these expeditionary events is we actually need a plan. And it's going to be more than the rose-tinted plan that will be there for 6 months and we'll be out by Christmas, if that teaches anything. So, Josh, what are you working on now?
I'm doing some research basically about working on a book about President Karzai's tenure in office and sort of U.S.-Afghan relations over the war. And so I've been trying to talk to as many people who worked in both the military and the embassy from starting in 2001 on, trying to trace the arc of this relationship, but I think it's pretty interesting from the president who is seen, President Karzai, who is seen as a hero and a savior, and this kind of charismatic moderate Afghan who could raise his country out of the ashes of war to now being blamed to a great degree for a lot of the problems and the corruption and the incompetence in his government. So trying to trace how that transformation took place. So that's
that'll be fascinating. Well, Josh, Matthew, and Steve, thank you very much. And until next time, goodbye.
Thank you.